Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Okay, all you wannabe field huggers, here's a badass way to chill and wind your mind around making it better, getting out and stretching your skills to become a certified real earth warrior. Or, want to head off to an exotic place to learn to do field studies as part of your college degree? Take a walk on the wild side. News, that is, coming up in less than it takes to recharge your iPod. I love doing field work. I've done plenty of it as a naturalist, working in state and national parks and contract work at different times. There's nothing like being in a natural place, surrounded by time and sunlight or rain, dressed for the occasion, field notebook, binoculars, camera, and whatever specialized equipment you need to go in-depth with one aspect of how our planet works. If that sounds like something you'd like to do, then let's get started. As far as I can tell, this seems to be a new era for nature, which is exciting because I think for quite a while, it almost seems as if nature fell off the radar screen far too much as all these new technologies and gizmos and the modern era just kind of marched right in front of all the wonders and extraordinary aspects of nature. And also with all of the challenges that are facing the planet right now in so many different ways with global warming and extinction of animals, depletion of the oceans, and on, thank goodness people are beginning to realize that we simply have to really learn what's going on and then make some fundamental differences. But the best way to do that is to really get down and learn. And there's about only one real way to do that, and that's to go out into the field and do the research. For those people who have had the great opportunity to do that, it's one of the most amazing things in the world. If you haven't done it, you need to. And that's why we're talking with Terry Andreas now, who joins us from New York City. Terry, welcome to the Wild Side News.
Thank you.
Well, when I talk about field studies, you're really a person that knows what I'm talking about. Why don't you give us an introduction to fieldstudies.org?
Well, I probably know more about teaching it than doing it, because I'm not a scientist myself. I'm also not a teacher. I just participated in inventing the School for Field Studies about 28 years ago. And largely then I was interested in how fast you can learn about something, or anyone can learn about something, when they're actually doing it. So if you go out into, say, a national park, and they've told you that their problem this week or this year is that last year 100,000 people came to visit it, and this year 2 million want to visit it, where should they start? I mean, and the first thing you do is figure out that the dirt roads, the dirt paths, they're not going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
So we've found that we can teach college students how to do field research when they're much more easily when they're doing real, honest, usable research for other people that they've met. And so it's a good thing for everybody to go into a community, even their own community, and take a look around at what they see, because we all care that we're going to be able to drink the water in 15 years.
Well, this is a really wonderful program, and I believe it's geared primarily to college students, although now is it open to people out of college as well?
Well, we have a graduate program in the summer in public health that has took place the first one last year in Kenya, or the first two. And this year, we don't know if it'll work in Kenya or not. We've moved our Kenya wildlife program to Tanzania. But we are branching out to some graduate courses. We like to do graduate students, and we have a couple of high school courses in the summertime. I think that one is in Baja California.
One of the things I think is really interesting, and I encourage people to go to the website at fieldstudies.org, and I'm going to spell that, fieldstudies.org. You've been at this for quite some time. You say 23 years?
28.
28 years. Well, there you go. Five more. You really have focused on primarily about five or six study countries. You're really on the ground there, and you've really established yourself. Why don't you, first of all, inform people about where most of your studies are taking place these days?
Well, they're usually in Kenya, right now Tanzania, Australia, Costa Rica, Baja California, and Turks and Caicos, which is a group of islands just north of the Dominican Republic.
Now, in terms of let's just talk about Costa Rica for a second. It gives people an idea of what's involved. Let's say a student wants to learn about field studies through your courses and they want to go to Costa Rica. How do they sort of apply?
Actually, the easiest way is to go to the website, fieldstudies.org. The application is online. The descriptions of the courses are online. And what we're doing there is assisting the government in literally what I was talking about before, what to do about their national parks, because their largest moneymaker in the country is now tourism, rather than coffee or pineapple or any of the things they used to major in, if you will. So they really need to know how to keep their national parks up, and they love them. There are lots and lots of really good national parks in the whole country.
I can recall years ago, I had a friend of mine who was involved in setting up a lot of those programs, and it was an exciting opportunity to really plant a huge green seed in the middle of Central America that is bearing fruit right now. So if a person goes to the Costa Rica site, are they staying in tents, or are they backpacking, or what's the situation there?
No, we have a dormitory. It was originally, 20 years ago, or maybe 15 years ago, a chalk factory, but it is a rather wonderful dormitory with a laboratory right in it, a big classroom, and an area to sort of lounge in. There's actually a television set, but I don't think it gets TV programs. They use it for videos. The lab is there, the library is there, the computer usage is there, and the rest of the area around the dormitory is little casitas that the professors live in on campus, on site, and a working farm, which raises mostly mangoes, oranges. They drink all their own orange juice. There is a medicinal herb garden there, collecting things from the local housewives, and a farmer on site, as you might imagine, to keep the thing going. It's quite beautiful. It's at the top of a cliff overlooking a river called the Rio Grande. I think every Central American country has one. And they leave from there to go to the national parks, but not every day. I mean, they design their own research, they work with the teachers, so they're doing a whole semester worth of courses, a semester's credit worth of courses.
I think that's an interesting part of this, too, and an important aspect, and that's that you're spending real time there.
Yes.
Okay, it's not some of the ecotourism projects will get you out there for, 5 days, 10 days, but this is really a semester-long project, so tell us about the commitment.
Well, it's 14 weeks, and it's accredited through not Boston University, unless you attend one of our affiliate colleges. I think there's 73 of those. And you do a whole semester of courses, exams, papers, and presentations. Everything the students do in their small teams is, in the end, presented to the community or to the client, often, in this case, someone from the National Park, the head of the National Park Service. They also present things to the town when we do water issues research. They end up presenting their findings to the town council. They also participate in the local schools. We do a lot of environmental teaching in elementary schools, taking what we learned in their community to the children who live there.
That's a great, great opportunity.
So the students get a lot of local involvement, and they love it. I mean, it's just the town loves it, we love it, and it's fun. Mm-hmm. We have parties.
Yeah. In terms of participating, what's the criteria for selecting students?
Well, I think it's not specific. There has to be a reasonable grade level, and they have to have had some courses in environmental studies of some sort, because otherwise the language is too complicated. The language of scientific research, I mean, you would know that.
Yes.
So they have to be familiar with the language. We used to ask them, please, to have had statistics, but we found that we have to teach that ourselves now.
No, I don't think that's a big popular topic these days. I guess if you're serious about science, you best get into statistics, but I think for the general people who have an interest, that's not going to be one of their curriculum.
Well, what you find is if you want to do research, you become interested in the statistics that analyze what it is you found out.
Sure.
So it's easier to learn when you want to know it, which is one of our premises. And if you really want to know about something, I mean, like how to make chocolate chip cookies out of a third of a bag of chocolate chips, multiply by a third.
Now, that's applied statistics for sure. I'd be curious in terms of the areas of focus. I know field research has so many dynamics. You've got plants, animals, doing taxonomic studies. There's so many different variables. I'm just curious, what's the focus of some of your studies there? Because you can't cover everything, but you certainly, I'm sure, are focused on a variety of things.
Right. Well, we talked about Costa Rica, where we also do water issues. But the other ones, in Kenya, we're looking at the interaction between large animals and the people who live there.
Mm.
And the conflict there is, do you work for a tourist bureau or sell things to the tourists, which would make you want to have lots of animals, large wild animals, or do you raise cows, which might make you want to have all the water for your cows? And there's a conflict like that all over Africa. So we look at the interaction. We don't take a side, but we try to get the people in the area to discuss it. We also look at elephant issues with Cynthia Moss in Amboseli in Kenya. We've moved all of our animal studies, as you know, for political reasons to Tanzania at this time, and we don't really know what's going to happen there. But that's what we do in Kenya. In Australia, there's been a long-term drought there, but we do issues on rainforest studies. And there we're looking at the effect of the drought at reestablishing rainforest areas in a secondary area. We're up in Queensland, which is just inland from Cairns and not far from Douglaston. But we're up on the Atherton Tableland. They're interested in maintaining their rainforest areas and the creatures that live in it in that particular part of the world. In Turks and Caicos, they have 13 underwater national heritage parks. We're trying to help them figure out how to maintain it. We looked at lobster catch. We do a little bit of population count. They're generally underwater issues.
I was looking through your website. You talked about the fact that people, they're going to be spending a lot of time in the water, so they need to think about snorkeling, but as well may have to come prepared to do some scuba, or at least that's an option for them.
Yes, it is.
What a beautiful way to do field research.
Yeah, it is. It's beautiful. A baby whale visited our center a couple of summers ago.
Oh, my goodness.
While they were underwater.
Well, after 28 years at this, I'm sure there's been some moments, some exciting moments. Any that come to mind that you think tell a particularly provocative story?
Well, my favorite student accident, fortunately, we've been very fortunate with our students. We've done very well over all the years and come out healthy. We have a safety director, and we visit the safety issues at the board level all the time. But my favorite student accident was a young man a long time ago who ran too fast out of his banda in Kenya and ran into a giraffe's leg. He got himself a big goose egg on his head, but it took his fellow students a little while to figure out what he had hit.
That's funny, because, of course, the giraffe is gone by this time.
Well, he didn't go very far because he was quite a tame giraffe.
Oh, that's fun. That's fun. You also work, as you say, for example, in Kenya or now Tanzania, with large animals, a lot of large wildlife studies. Talk about some of the ways in which you're working with them. That sounds fascinating. I know, for example, there's been a story just recently, I think is very controversial, where some of the elephant management programs in various areas of Africa have been so successful that they're now beginning to cull the animals. And it's I haven't done the research to really find out what I think about that. I think generally I don't like the concept of killing elephants because they are such family animals and such communal animals.
Yes.
That it seems to me that could traumatize the herd. But just your thoughts. Have you been following that story at all?
I see it from time to time. It's very painful to even think about it. Students certainly discuss it. We don't generally come to conclusions. I mean, I certainly wouldn't want to kill a single one of them. But then you have to talk to the people who live there whose farms have been crushed and talk about, can they have birth control for the elephant? And maybe that should be a big game sport, you know?
Hmm. Interesting. Go out with your...
Starting and sterilizing an elephant, or at least temporarily.
Wow.
I mean, I don't know. It's an awful subject.
Unfortunately, these are the things that in the real world we're having to deal with.
Yep, these are the interactions between wildlife and humans, yeah.
There's been in many cases, some great success stories. And sometimes those success stories have a backlash effect, and I guess that's what we're learning. That's where these field studies come in so well. I would guess as well a lot of your work really is useful in terms of creating baseline studies for areas, which are critical in terms of measuring change through time.
Well, it is. And some places we're sort of unaware that, or we were until last summer, that Kenya didn't even have a population count, the area in which my public health students were working. So essentially, in vaccinating the women and the children who came into the public health clinic, you could count the population. And the government of Kenya had no idea what the population was in that area. So we just furnished that to the government. And it's a very useful service just to count the people.
Human baseline studies.
Yes.
That's fundamental.
Yeah.
That's very interesting. You're also working in Mexico. Also, I think in Mexico you offer a high school program. Most of your work is for college students, and then you have a few graduate courses. But as well, you offer a summer course.
Yes, they're looking at the turtle issues in Baja. A lot of turtles lay their eggs there, and the water issues, and the fact that the population is growing really, really fast there, and it's customary to eat turtles. So there's another human-animal interaction.
Well, that's become a huge issue because that's where the turtles lay their eggs.
It is.
And if people just continue to destroy the eggs, there's dramatic... Well, you know more about this than I do because you're down there all the time.
Yes, but if they don't eat the eggs and eat the turtles, the tourists come and spend money in their town. So there is a point to letting them know, letting the town know how valuable these turtles and their egg-laying habits are to the town.
Oh, that's fascinating. There's so many different things we could talk about, but one of the things I'd be certainly interested in, you know, the concept of the economic values of ecotourism versus the traditional forms of timber harvesting, mineral harvesting, etc. How is that playing out in the field there, literally in the field? And that's what you're doing a lot of your studies about.
It's absolutely fascinating to the students because as much as they love turtles or elephants or whatever when they come, they do learn that, you know, life is about shades of gray. Nothing is perfect. The decision-making we all have to do our whole life on one thing or another. So this is an introduction to it in a way that interests them and in a way that they can make a positive contribution to the interactions of animals and humans by informing the people of how life really is, how much money they're making from these people who come stay in their hotels and rent their boats and use their beaches.
Of course, in some respects, that's an invasion of non-indigenous species, and that has its own effects.
Yes, it is. Yeah, that's a very good point.
And that's something that concerns me, is the preservation of diversity of cultures. I think that's a very, very important issue. So there's trade-offs everywhere. You know, there really are. In terms of the scheduling for your classes, when are your semesters scheduled?
Late September to early December, end of January to May. There are two 5-week courses at each center in the summertime, and the public health courses are in the summer. About June to middle of July to the end of August.
Now, there's a fee, and it's a pretty hefty fee. Maybe that's not the right term for it, but some people will go, my gosh, because I'll just mention a rough figure, about $15,000. But that does include, outside of the airfare, it includes all of the course study, living accommodations, food, and travel within the country.
Yes, we also have a lot of scholarships.
Oh, excellent.
And so you just talk to the admissions people or go online and correspond with them. There are a lot of scholarships. There are a lot of scholarships, especially for people at public colleges or public universities that are specially set aside because their tuitions are so different. Our tuition is about the same as a private college,
right?
Without the room and board.
I'm older than some of my listeners, and I can remember when tuition was like $120 a quarter.
I know.
Yeah.
Me too.
Those were good days. I remember that.
We had a lot of money then, though.
We did. It was a glory time. It was truly the good days.
Yes.
And it's hard for me to understand how people manage these days with the cost of tuition. It's really astonishing.
It's astounding. It is.
Yeah. So I think your fees are comparable to what people are accustomed to paying, you know, in regular universities.
It's also a nonprofit. I mean, we're not in it for the money, not charging anything extra.
Well, it sounds absolutely fascinating. And after 28 years, what actually brought you to doing this? You mentioned that you're not really trained as a scientist, so how did you come about getting into operating fieldstudies.org?
Well, I have four grown children and several grandchildren, and it occurred to me as they were growing up, they were young teenagers or preteens, when I started this with four friends in Boston, and it was obvious to me that if you could exhibit to them why you had to learn, say, fractions and how it was useful to you, that they learned it really fast. And we were all talking in Boston at dinner one night, and four of us got together and tried out, before we ever started this organization, an experiential learning course. We took 14-year-olds, which was seriously, we decided it was a mistake. We needed older students. And then we evolved it. I mean, the year before we opened it, I went to Africa to watch a survival trainer, a Harvard professor, and 17 students do experiments on heat, light, and rhinoceros. And these kids picked up the language in a heartbeat. They were fascinated with it, so they learned it right away. And so we decided to try it. At first, the first 5 years, it was just the summer. And then we decided it was just the same amount of effort to recruit students for summer as for winter. We might as well do it. That way we could hire people year-round and not have to rehire every summer. Anyway, mm-hmm. it evolved.